ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome back to Soccer Today. We are back. I am married. I came back from my honeymoon and caught up a bit on soccer. But first of all, long time I haven't said those words. Dwayne, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Still not married myself, but yeah, we'll continue on. This is the longest stretch. I realize this is the longest stretch that I have gone without doing a podcast since, just before we met, quote unquote, met online, which would have been we would have met in February 2014, right?
Yeah.
So and we immediately did five rings, and then I think we took 2 weeks off and started Two Solitudes immediately after that. So it's been the longest stretch since 2014 that I have gone without doing a podcast. So got the itch.
Well, let's take care of the itch right now. Soccer, World Cup, United States beating the Netherlands 2-0 in the final. United States back-to-back World Cup champions. Congratulations to the United States women's national team. They did play a brilliant World Cup. When you look at the play of Rapinoe, I was truly impressed. I have this image. You were with me. We were having lunch on a little day before the wedding for me and my groomsman, Dwayne, and some friends. So we were there in a little pub watching U.S. women's national team. And I have to say, I was impressed by Rapinoe. The quality of soccer in this tournament this time around, and the difference of tactics, the different countries rising up. I have to say, overall, if we don't look at Canada's results, it was a pretty good World Cup.
Yeah, no, in terms of the overall quality, I think there's definite improvement from 2015 and much more and great improvement from 2011. If you go back that far and even further back than that, I mean, in the late 2000s, it was not even night and day. Like, even the Americans back then, I think that this American team would, you know, throw four or five past those teams. It's just improving at that pace. Seven of eight of the final eight were European. I think that is very telling. If you look at those countries, what they have in common is they all have emerging professional league standards. But the other big story of this World Cup, and, you know, I mentioned I hadn't podcasted in 2 weeks, but I did, CTV News Channel did have me as their women's football expert for hits during the World Cup. So I did have some chance to talk about it. And what I said on that show on Sunday when I spoke to them was that the deserving winner won. And it was kind of what was surprising to me, Kevin, about the overall World Cup is how easily the U.S. won this thing. They won on a canter. They really weren't pushed that hard. That surprised me a great deal. The athleticism, the high-level athleticism that they have, the advantages that they have in that program are just immense, and it is going to be difficult even in the next 4 years, in my mind, to overcome them, even with the emergence of the European teams. I listened to a few podcasts during the World Cup from England. I was listening to a lot of English opinion of that, and of course the English women finished fourth in this tournament, lost the bronze medal game again, both sides of the gender finished fourth. They don't take third place games seriously enough in that country. I love the third place game.
Who does?
Leave that aside.
Who does?
Put that on a shelf. Well, the players did. Sweep looked very happy when they won. But at any rate, putting that on a shelf now, though, what they said I thought was really insightful. There's a lot of insight from that, because I think that anything that's outside of the normal women's soccer bubble but does have the knowledge, the base knowledge, can offer, I think, a unique view of the women's game, because those of us in North America, I think, are kind of stuck in that bubble and kind of get stuck in a certain way. Basically, what they said is they have a 40-year head start on the European countries, and even though they are starting to go around, it's not going to happen overnight, that change. The U.S. has... You know, they could put three. It's the same as the Canadian hockey argument. There's your bingo card moment. You could put three teams in the damn Olympics, and the third team would still compete for the gold medal, right? So the U.S. is in the same boat. And even though seven of eight are now right there, and I think we can talk about Canada after this and what that means to Canada, seven and eight are still there, but those seven and eight are still not where the U.S. is. Which we should segue into Canada, Kevin. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Canada. Losing to Sweden in the round of 16. Disappointments, yes. Canada lacked offense the entire tournament, I think is a fact more than an opinion at this point. What would you say? Disappointment? Maybe being getting a Sweden team that was better than we all thought? Or maybe this result is more indicative of the last game of the group stage? I don't know. What is your thought on this situation?
If you look at their last two games, they lost to the Dutch, they lost to the Swedes, and that is obviously your second and third place finisher in the tournament. And you can look at that as half full and say that Canada was competitive in both of those games. 2-1 loss to the
That's
Dutch, 1-0 loss to the Swedes. And that's fair to a point. Canada was very solid defensively. I think Ashley Lawrence had a brilliant tournament. Right now, you know, if I had to handicap my vote for player of the year, I think Ashley Lawrence might be my vote. You know, Sophie Schmidt would go, some people would say, I think, but I know who wouldn't be my vote, and that would be Christine Sinclair. And yeah. I say that with the utmost respect, right? She just didn't have anywhere near the impact in the tournament that Canada needed her to have if Canada was to go to the beat. Now, had they got a little bit of luck and they got past the Swedes, then maybe they could have been standing in the same place the Swedes could. That is possible. They are still in the realm of the conversation where, with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of fortune, they can get on a roll. But I think that that's the key point there. You need that luck now. They cannot. They're not there day in, day out. Their ranking of fifth, which will drop after this World Cup.
Yeah, probably around ten or so, I imagine.
I think they finished where they should have. They were top 16, but not top 8.
Yeah,
and
true. Fair.
The question moving forward is whether they can stick there with 4 more years of development in the European game.
Yeah, but also, though, the positive or the silver lining of this is 4 more years of experience, hoping that Jordan Heinema, that Danini Becky continue their amazing rise to the top of the women game. And, of course, Jordan Heinema will be the heir apparent of Christine St. Clair for the future, but with those players, Jordan Heinema is going to make her debut next year in Europe. So with the rise of those players taking over more space, more playing time, at least 4 more years, you can always imagine that Canada can have a successful World Cup, whatever the successful threshold is, if it's a quarterfinal, semifinal, or heck, whatever the case may be, in 4 years, maybe, hopefully, the baton is passed.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I don't think they're going to drop off the map. They're not going to in danger of missing out on World Cups and so on and so forth. But I do, what I worry about when it comes to the Canadian team, this is a broken record at this point, and I appreciate that maybe I'm too far into the weeds when it comes to evaluating them sometimes, and I don't see the bigger sort of overall general picture of them in the fact that they are still going to be a World Cup team year after year after year after year, which is something. I don't like doing men's women's comparisons, but in this particular case, I'm going to both on the Canadian and the American side of things here, because I'm going to compare the Canadian women's national team to the U.S. men's national team in terms of where their standing is in the world. They are always, you know, barring crazy stuff happening in Trinidad and Tobago, they're always going to probably make World Cups, but are they going to truly contend in them? Probably not. That's like the U.S. men. Where I'm going to compare them to the Canadian men is that I think that they're in the same situation, the overall program, the overall system is in the same situation that the men was in about 2008, 2009, meaning that they have finally these opportunities for the top-level players, and they are going to get those opportunities. They're going to continue to play at a high level, whether that be in Europe or whether that be in the NWSL. But what we don't have is an infrastructure below that, and that is really going to hurt the game. This is a broken record for sure. I've said it on Twitter. I went on a rant about it that night. If we truly, really, really want this team to rise up and compete for a World Cup title, and that is the stated goal of the Canadian women's national team, then we need to invest in the professional side of the game in this country. And I know there are a lot of people that will go, well, you can't. They're going to lose money, and the Canadian Premier League is not on strong enough footing yet. But what are your priorities? If it is to compete to win a World Cup, then you can't do it unless you do that. So if you really, truly just want to be market-driven in terms of the eventual starting of a Canadian Women's Premier League, then, well, the sacrifice for that is you're going to continue to have World Cups that look like this, where you probably are going to be top 16, but not top 8.
Well, let's look at the United States, Dwayne, for a second, the women's national team. You are talking about how there's still a big gap between them and the rest of the top 8, right? The 7 out of 8 European teams, gap, U.S. Women's National Team. And you know what that gap is? The NWSL. The amount of players, not just American, but worldwide, that play in the NWSL, which is, as of now, the premier league in the world for women professional soccer. And the players, the development of players, the rise of players, the death of the U.S. Women's National Team is directly correlated with the NWSL in the last decade. So there's a blueprint, there's an idea, there's concepts there. We can replicate it maybe to a different scale, maybe smaller scale, yes. But it is replicable in our own country. If Iceland took a blueprint and was able to replicate it to a smaller scale and then have its team qualify and perform well in a World Cup, well, on the women's side in Canada, we can, with the infrastructure we have now, find a way to get a women's national league started, to create the depth of a national team program, and eventually have a team that can compete with the top eight of Europe and eventually with the U.S. Women's National Team in a decade. I think that blueprint of the NWSL U.S. Women's National Team is replicable to a smaller scale. I agree, but it is replicable.
Yeah, you know, it is. Maybe you have to regionalize it a bit. Maybe you have to attach it into the Canadian Premier League, the men's side, and maybe play double headers or something like that. I think there are ways that you can make this mutually beneficial for both sides. But when you see not only the U.S. and the NWSL continue to grow strong with some Canadian presence in there, and that is great for the elite athletes that compete at that level, but when you only have 16 contracts to give out, that's not enough to drive an entire cycle. You know, I hear also suggestions that the Premier League, the English Premier League, men, is looking to purchase the WSL. If they do that, well, if you look at the WSL, the Women's Super League in England right now, Manchester United, of course, got promoted to the top flight after coming in for the first time in a long time last year and dominating the championship tier. First game of the season is going to be at the Etihad, and it's going to be Man City, Manchester Derby to start the season. So,
why not?
You know, this is growth in the game going over there, too. The Premier League buys that, then that league will, yeah, I think, quickly start to rival the NWSL with the best European players. And then suddenly you got a real problem here in this country if you don't have equal access to these leagues.
No, exactly. And I think it's a good way to segue out of the World Cup talk. And, of course, if there's a way to fast-track the presence of a professional team in Canada, maybe via an NWSL franchise in the meantime, until there is said league in Canada, maybe that is the way to go as well. Three teams is better than none. We have learned that with the last decade of MLS teams in Canada and a little bit of development on the player side related to the MLS and the players' academies, especially in those three cities. So maybe fast-tracking the presence of a team in Vancouver, like it was rumored long, long time ago, and maybe it's not the way to go. Maybe it's around Toronto area. Maybe MLSC wants, which I doubt, but I don't think so. And you mentioned a few times on Twitter over the last few days that it's not in their plans, but you never know. Maybe that's the way to go. Fast track the presence of one, two, maybe three professional teams in this country via the NWSL until there's a league of our own on the women's side.
And there's nothing to say that you have to be an MLS team that is investing in that side of the
game. Of course.
One of the Canadian Premier League teams could do it. Hamilton has a beautiful stadium right there and a need to fill it for even more dates. Winnipeg, same thing. I mean, there's no reason to stop anyone. The Fury, hell, I mean, you know, we have issues with the Fury, but nonetheless, they want to invest in this. I'll have less issues with them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's always a possibility, and hopefully there's development on that side. Because there's going to be some thinking and maybe some reshuffling of strategies, long-term strategies and player development on the women's side to make sure there's a generation after the young generation. Now you have to plan this a decade in advance. And now is the time to plan this with the ideology of we should have a league. How do we get that started? Maybe a couple teams, and this will lead to development and the death of more players. And Dwayne, to finish on this subject before we move on to the Gold Cup, and again talk about Canada's performance, but if you look at League One Ontario Women's League and the PLSQ, the Women League in Quebec as well, the teams, there's already been graduates that have gone to play for the national program on the women's side from those teams. And I think it's a great, at least it's a great example of having professional semi-pro teams, just having an opportunity for players to grow and to become fully fledged professional players who are on the way there and getting an opportunity and making the most out of it. So I'm just, the names escape me, but there's players from Malta and other places in the PLSQ women that have been looked at by the national program. It's the same for League One, Ontario Women League. So maybe that's the way to go, and more of those programs, maybe get together, create a super program to have maybe a league in Canada. There's something to be done. And every 4 years after the Women's World Cup, we talk about this issue, and we talk about, especially in the States too, you like what we did, now look at us play in our own league. I think there's always a cry for attention after a World Cup, and it's always warranted, yes, but this time around, let's use that time for not just attention, but maybe some financial attention towards leagues or team in Canada.
Yeah, precisely. That's an entirely other show that you just described right there that we don't have time to get in today. But yes, the call that of shame right now. We're in the shaming cycle. The people are you know, angry now that people aren't watching the NWSL the same way they watch the Women's World Cup, so they yell at them. So that's not a good approach. I'll just say that for now. There is things that can be done, and there is a momentum that you need to capture right now. But look, I do agree, Kevin, with you that I think that the most logical way forward when you want to combine the business side with the sort of ethics, moral, gender equality side is to have at least one NWSL team in this country if we're going to be equal partners. Whether the NWSL is interested in that or not is a question that we don't know the answer of, but certainly we have seen ample evidence that the three MLS teams in this country have not shown a great degree of enthusiasm towards the idea. I have issues with that, but that's, as I said, is a topic for a different day on a show that's dedicated to that. So maybe we should talk about the Gold Cup now. And Gold Cup, it went kind of the chalk, except for Haiti, and unfortunately we were part of that chalk.
Yeah, no, even Jamaica had a good performance, making it all the way to the semifinal, losing 2-1 to the United States, which I was in Jamaica. And you know what was tough? Finding a way to watch Jamaica play in Jamaica. You would think it's easy. You would think people care. Not really. So here's you. People in Jamaica didn't really care about the Gold Cup. At least not in Montego Bay proper. Not in the resort area. Not in Freeport. And not on the town where I went to walk. People didn't really care about the Gold Cup. But you know what? Mexico 1, United States 0 in the final. We'll get to talk about Mexico and U.S. in a second. Canada losing in the quarters to Edie 3-2. And here's the story I want to talk about. It's my wedding day. It's my wedding. I have a table that is comprised of Dwayne, of course, one of my groomsmen, David, a great friend of ours who loves soccer, and journalists covering the Impact as well, Julian and Tristan. So we're all there. They're all there in front of me, and they keep looking at me, telling me the score. And I'm like, yeah, it's my wedding day. I'm so happy. And they look at me like, no, it's not going well. Canada was up, but they're not anymore, and they just lost. And then they look at me like, yeah, the Impact lost too. And I got married, so it's all good. But Edie beat Canada 3-2 with a late epic comeback for Haiti.
And TFC was also playing, and they were leading up to the 93rd minute and blew that in the 93rd minute. So everything except for the wedding was going badly.
Exactly.
The things that day, but
the wedding went great. Nothing went wrong. Everything went according to plans. But I didn't trip during my dance. I didn't trip the bride during my dance. That was great. But my soccer teams all lost that day.
Yeah, no, it was something to see. Look, at 2-0, I'm not going to lie, I saw it get 2-0 like many Canadians, and I relaxed a little bit. I was at a wedding, for God's sakes, and the dinner was being served, and there was, I wasn't drinking that night, but there was wine to be given out to people, and there was music to listen to and speeches to hear, and, you know, the game was on a phone sort of on the side, and I wasn't really paying too much attention. I saw it was 2-1. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not ideal, but yeah, it should be fine. And then almost instantly, you know, it was not great. And then 3-2. What? How? look, I guess the answer to how is, are you new?
This is Canada, after all. Is it your first game watching Canada? Is this your first Gold Cup? Exactly.
in terms of a more critical evaluation. Look, it was a funny World Cup in the sense that I think anyone who watched Canada play in the group stage had to walk away feeling somewhat happy about the evolution of the young players and the potential for them moving forward. But at the same time, they also walked away from that tournament going, well, in the end, it was the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And there was, for the first time in a long time, maybe since he was named the manager, there was legitimate pushback against John Herdman and some of the decisions he made. And this is, I think, something that we said when he was first hired, is that we don't know how he's going to react to the type of pressures that he's going to find at tournaments like this. Because, and this isn't meant as a women's versus men's game argument, but rather a reality of what they face argument. And the women don't get that at the CONCACAF level. They only get it at the World Cup level or the Olympic level, which is you're already accomplished something. You're already there. Like, no one – it's just not the same pressure when you're at the big tournament already, in my mind. When you're playing at that lower regional level and you have to claw your way up to get into the conversation, I think it's a different thing. And, you know, we saw John Herdman do a strange rotation in the first game against Mexico where he put out a B lineup for some reason, and then that was cocky, I guess.
You know, the reason is because I'm going to keep my best tactics and formation for the semifinal game, thinking he's already there. But I guess he forgot about Haiti. I guess he forgot about the last 15 minutes of the Haiti game. And defensive changes, that spelled the end for Canada. Because at the end of the day, we are who we are. And I guess we left them off the hook, as Dennis Green would say.
Yeah, and look, there was a colossal error that led to their first goal on the back. Overall in the tournament, the back line, I think that there was positives in terms of Daniel Henry's play. I think anyone who still thinks that this is the same Daniel Henry that was giving up penalties for TFC 5 years ago was a little bit taken aback by his play in the tournament and happy about that. You need more than him, though, right? And Cornelia, you know, there were elements to be positive there, but there was a lot of problems, particularly at the fullback position. He's forced to play Davis back there. You know, that
Davies,
means that when
left back.
The time comes that you're – and it's double whammy, too, because the time comes you're making a change to try and get more offense, all you can really do is try and get him more forward, which means you have to put Ashton Morgan in. No offense to Ashton, but that's not really adding anything to any more offensive pieces. You're just moving Davies up further, which you should have been to begin with. So it's a lot going on there that was questionable. And I think that there is, you know, a few things here in terms of at least we're getting some pushback on Herdman, and he's not viewed as a golden child anymore. I was talking to not the people inside the game were viewing him as a golden child ever. There is still a lot of consternation towards how he was hired, and a lot of people feel that this is an example of the old boys network in play, just a different old boys network, right? Like, they pushed out the one that everyone sacked the CFA for back in the late part of the last decade, and now they brought another one in. And this is an example of that. And that's where I come down in terms of this. I'm concerned about the fact that it doesn't appear that there was much of a hiring process that was put in place for this. It seems like he was handed the keys without much of a vetting process. And they were, you know, doing an apples-to-apples comparison between the men's and the women's games, which it's the same sport. But is it the same game? I don't know. Different level of depth, for sure. I don't think anyone can argue that. And this was the first test, and did he pass it? Did he fail it? I think he's got a non-complete.
Yeah,
is what it is.
I think it's we need more. We need a bigger sample size to take a decision, because Canada did look amazing at some point in that tournament. It has to be said. Jonathan David, Golden Boot of the 2019 Gold Cup, the second tournament in a row, Dwayne. Well, second Gold Cup in a row, where a Canadian player is the Golden Boot, actually in 2015, Davies. And was it 2015? No, it was 2017. 2017, Davies.
Every 2 years, yeah.
Every 2 years. And so two straight Gold Cup, Canada has a Golden Boot, 6 goals for Jonathan David. And I think that's the big story in this Gold Cup, the positive one, at least for Canada, is the play of Jonathan David. People like Montreal Impact fans that were discovering Jonathan David watching Canada play were like, oh, get him to Montreal. Yeah, no. He's not coming to MLS anytime soon. He's going to a bigger league in the world for sure. Gent wants to keep him, and they're going to sell him high in a few years to a bigger club. That's almost a given. Jonathan David might be, at the end of the day, coming from nowhere and becoming the best striker this country has ever seen. This is a very probable story that we're going to see unfold in front of us in the next 4 to 8 years, and hopefully in a World Cup match in a city near you in 2026.
There was some suggestion that Dortmund might even be interested in David, and certainly, you know, after this Gold Cup, you can't say that those clubs might not are taking a less of an interest in. Although there's a more credible rumor that suggests that Gladbach, Mönchengladbach, is perhaps interested in, and I think that's something that appeals to, you know, a lot of Canadian fans, that level of club. You know, we just saw Kyle Lahren move to another Turkish club on loan with the potential to buy. So I'm always careful with this. I don't want, especially when it came to to Davies and David, who seems to show a lot of potential, I want them to go to big clubs, but at the same time, I want them to play. So I'm of two minds when it comes to it. Is it better for him to go to Gladbach and see if he can present himself there? And then maybe if he does well there, then Dortmund can reach out and give him some different player time. And I think maybe, you know, his rise has been pretty quick. So I think that would be an appropriate move for him at this point. Or, you know, even another year at Genk would be good. Or Genk, probably.
Yeah, well, when the step is not that high and you maybe have a couple of step, you have a bigger success rate of chances. Of course, we look at Balu, we look at Davies recently, coming from MLS to a big team, big names in Europe, and there's a huge gap, and then we have to learn how to train. And Jonathan David is a bit in a different situation where he's already been in Europe. That's where he made his name, already there. The level of training etiquette, I would say, the ethics of personal life as a pro. Look at his shape. Like, there's a lot of great, I would say, factor that makes him a blue chip prospect. And having a stepping stone, like, okay, now you're in Belgium, you're in the Jupiler League. Okay, one step up, go to a mid-table Bundesliga team where you'll have your playing time. You're still going to have to earn your playing time. It's not going to be given to you, that's for sure. But if you earn it and you score and you continue on your great rise in that level, playing against great team and proving at a high level that you can score against a Munich on a great game, or you can score against Dortmund, or you can score against another Werder Bremen, whatever the case may be, in the Bundesliga, and then you get the big move to a bigger club. We've seen this happen many times. Look at Ronaldo. Starts in his Cristiano Ronaldo, not fat Ronaldo, Brazilian, but Cristiano Ronaldo. He started with his small club, then Lisboa, Portugal, and then Man United. So that Lisboa, Portugal type of club, and then a move to a big club. So maybe Gladbach or something similar for Jonathan David in another league would be the perfect solution, because you do have more playing time probably than Davies had in his beginning with Munich, but still have to prove yourself. And the rewards of scoring against Munich, it's seen a bit better than scoring against a Bundesliga 2 side.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Gladbach is a club that potentially on a good season could compete for European spots as well. Although they've been yo-yo in times, they seem to have steadied the ship, and there's a lot of history to that club. There's a lot of great fans there. In
Canadian,
you know, one
history
of the
too,
leagues.
Right? So a few Canadian players played for Gladbach back in the day.
Yeah, Rob Friend being the biggest prominent one in there. That was when they were winning B2. He was their leading scorer. That was a long time ago now. But anyway, Jesus, that's when I first started covering this damn game. Makes me feel old even thinking about it. But nonetheless, no, even him moving to a higher team in the Belgian league, I think would be positive. I just want to see forward moving in his career. But although his club did make the playoffs, although they were rated that bottom team in the second season playoff in the weird format that the Belgian league has. So we want to see him move up. But look, I don't know what to think about this Gold Cup. I'm vaguely disappointed. That's how I would describe it. I'm not like
what
overtly
could have been
screaming at the clouds, but I'm vaguely disappointed. I'm not happy that they did not go to the semifinals. I thought they should have, and particularly up 2-0. I mean,
from that
point forward, that's bad. But the overall performance, and Haiti played well in this tournament.
Oh,
they pushed Mexico to the final second, so it's not that they lost to a bad team.
They lost 1-0 to Mexico, and I think those are the stories to take away. Jamaica playing great all the way to the semis, losing to US, and Haiti playing surprising role in this Gold Cup and making all the way to the semi and pushing Mexico to a 1-0 loss. Like, you lose 1-0 to Mexico, I'll take that. as Canada, I'll take a 1-0 loss to Mexico any day. So I think that is interesting, and it will make for a fun Nations League tournament starting in the fall. And I have to apologize for the squeaky chair. It's about time I move studios next week, because my chair is becoming squeaky. We've had that problem before. I need some lubricant for the chairs. But so apologies for that. Every time I move, there's a little squeak. So sorry for the podcast listeners. But Dwayne, for me, this Gold Cup, like you mentioned, for Canada is what could have been. They look so good in the group stage on a few games. I was like, oh man, this is fun. I can get behind the flair of this team. And even in the second game, I still thought that Canada played well. It's fun to see great players, but it is what could have been. Like, as much as it was fun to see Jonathan David score, it was a bit mind-boggling seeing the lack of option at left back and seeing Davies push to such a deep role that wasn't exploiting his most potential influence on the game, which is when he goes forward with the ball. So there's a lot of things to take out of this, a lot of positive and some negative heading into the Nations League. But that's the positive thing for the Canadian men's national team, is they will have competitive games in just a few months' time, and they will be able to challenge and test themselves against the USA, against Mexico, which battled each other in the final of this Gold Cup, Dwayne, with Mexico getting the victory this time, 1-0.
Yeah, and look, Mexico was clearly the favorite going into this, and there wasn't much question that they were the best team in the tournament, although the Americans did, play sort of heartedly good in there and managed to keep it tight. But I don't think anyone particularly was surprised that it was a 1-0 result in the end. A lot of questions. If you read or listen to American commentary of it, there's a lot of questions about Berhalter, versus Martinez in that second half. Martinez making the adjustments, Berhalter not. A lot of American fans sort of pointing to that, saying that, we could have had him, we could have hired him, but the USSF is too stubborn and there must be an American solution. There must be something to that. So there's questions about it. But, in the end, the Gold Cup, as I said, chalk is the best way to describe this tournament. Haiti was the surprise, Curacao as well. But because Honduras, that's another story we're not talking about. Honduras looked terrible in this tournament, and that means they slipped out. But then Haiti's been raised up to meet their pride. Yeah, I know. But
isn't that sad? Honduras struggled in the Gold Cup.
I personally don't have anything against Honduras. It's not their fault.
I have nothing for them either. Anyways.
I am not in the hashtag FH community, to be honest. I'm played up for jokes, but it's as if it's their fault they lost. They were able to beat us 8-1. Maybe they could have stopped it, but, whatever.
At least they didn't celebrate the 8th goal.
Yeah, fans did, I think. But I actually spoke to Rashman Dandy, the CTV reporter who was down there on the field size when that game was going on, about his experience, and he said he was literally scared for his life about 5 or 6 games.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Exactly. It was a surprising. It was a chalk Gold Cup when you look at the final result. There was some great stories. Of course, you mentioned Curacao that had looked really good in this tournament versus the expectations we have of them. And I think that's what this Gold Cup was. And I think that's where we feel a bit maybe disappointed, is for Canada, we had more expectations than maybe ever before heading into a Gold Cup with the crop of great players coming through the pipeline over the last couple of years. But that's where it ends for Canada for this time around. This fall, of course, the Nations League, and we'll be able to see and maybe judge the growth of the program under Herdman, because it's coming close. World Cup qualifying is coming in, 12 months' time? So
I think it'll be less than a year. Now that we know that there's going to be 32 teams in Qatar, I suspect that we'll have the format confirmed in the next couple months, and that we'll be maybe even having the early games played in this fall, the games Canada would not be involved in. So I suspect Canada will probably come into the World Cup, if I had to speculate, Kevin, next year, in March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about too. So March 2020 or spring 2020, we anticipate the World Cup qualifying to begin in CONCACAF, at least at the level of Canada. So we got a year to get ready. The games in the fall are very important, and a year is not enough to make a big change. So it has to work this spring. Otherwise, it's just another cycle and another disappointment for soccer in Canada. But that's not what we're going to talk about for the rest of the show. Actually, we're just going to move down south, talk about Copa America for a brief minute. Of course, Brazil won at home for the first time winning a tournament at home in a long time. They beat Peru in the final, the first time Peru makes it to the Copa America final. But the big, big talking point here is Lionel Messi in Argentina not being able to get to the final, to win the final. They lost in the semis to Brazil, of course. And there was a lot of speculation behind the scenes of Argentinian officials saying, VAR, the radio was interfered with in the VAR room by the president of Brazil. This is not right. This game was fixed. Blah, blah, blah on both sides. Of course, one of the biggest rivalry in the international game in the world, Argentina, Brazil, having some consequences behind the scene after Brazil eliminated Argentina in the semifinal.
Yeah, quickly for any pedantics listening out there, of course, we do understand that the Brazilian under 23 team won a tournament in Brazil, but we're talking about the fully senior national team here when we're talking about this Olympic one. They won the Olympics, but look, I watched that game in a bar packed full of people on a Tuesday night or something in Toronto, and even that team, those jerseys playing, those jerseys still have such a big pull in this world game. But I remember sitting there halfway through the game thinking to myself, is this a good game? Is this a must-see TV event? Is this something that should be packing bars on a Tuesday night in a city 5,000 kilometers away? And I wasn't convinced, and the reason I'm not convinced is despite having, you know, a generational talent, and like a pretty damn close talent, well, in Aguero, in terms of scoring abilities, Argentina has never been able to put it all together because of the overall instability and corruption below them at that level, at the FA level. And these kind of distractions about talking about, you know, VAR controversies, and there's even a story about them potentially considering a move from UEFA to play in the UEFA Nations League. What's geography even mean anymore? Like,
jeez, that would be weird.
Well, yeah, well, Japan start in the third tier?
Japan and Qatar did play the Copa America, so maybe it might not be that big of a stretch.
There is a tradition of having two guest teams. Yeah, little trivia question. Canada was actually invited to the 2001 Copa America, and we're all set to go until political instability in Colombia had the CFA decide to pull out at the last second anyway. So lost an opportunity there. I think Costa Rica came in, and, well, they did pretty well after that. So anyway, long time ago now.
Yeah, exactly. But that's fascinating, yeah. And, of course, Brazil won the Copa America versus Peru. Peru, it's a great performance just to make it there. Not a power in the South American game, but still making it a big, big performance all the way to the final. It's always an interesting tournament to watch. But, of course, there was a big day of soccer. Last Sunday, with the World Cup final, then followed by the Copa America final and finishing with the Gold Cup final at night, was a pretty big day for my DVR.
Yeah, precisely. Peru, there's always in South America, there's a team that sort of rises up and is kind of that last team that captures the last World Cup spots. And Peru seems to be in that cycle now. It was Paraguay a few years ago. You know, like there's always kind of that ebb and flow at the bottom of Conobo. And it seems like Peru is in the upswing right now, having made the World Cup and then getting to a Copa final. I would have to put them in the favorites to capture a World Cup spot. For Qatar at this point, a younger generation there. And I'm not just saying that because I have a lot of Peruvian friends. They do seem to be adding something to the South American game. But, you know, that said, you look at the other side of that, and some of those teams that I just mentioned are on down cycle. So it sort of works out in the end. I'm not going to lie. Copa was on a very busy soccer schedule. Generally was sacrificed for me in this particular cycle. I do have to, you know, live a little and take care of other people in my life and travel to Montreal and so on and so forth. But the semifinals and finals I did watch, and I did enjoy them. And enjoyed the international football that I saw this summer, but I'm ready to move and focus on the second half of the Major League Soccer season. Well, let's look past the second half now, but
yeah, Montreal's got 13 games left to play. They have 21 played already. But you're right. It's time to move to the club game, our focus. And we're ready, energized after a few weeks of break to come back with a lot of energy and a lot of great shows. Speaking of great shows, tomorrow, the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for Patrons Only makes it big. Long-awaited return for patrons only. Make sure you become a patron on patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Tomorrow, Dwayne and I will break down the Canadian Championship games that are happening tonight. Vancouver versus Cavalry, where horses play during the Stampede in Calgary at Spruce Meadows, and in York at York Lions Stadium. York 9 versus the Montreal Impact. The first time Canadian Premier League team faces higher opposition on the professional pyramid here in Canada. It is going to be a good day for Canadian football.
Yeah, and of course, we get to find out just if the USL is on our level with the Ottawa Fury playing Halifax Wanderers as well. We will also break down TFC's TAM signing a little bit on Friday's show. Not enough time today, and we don't really know enough about this player, to be blunt.
Yep, and the Nacho Piatti rumors as well, with a club from Argentina making a lot of big efforts to get Nacho. We'll talk about this as well on Friday. And tomorrow, like we mentioned, we'll review the Voyagers Cup games from tonight. Dwayne, it was a long time. We finally talked about soccer. I had that itch too. And after itching a lot from the bug bites in Jamaica, it's good to finally scratch a soccer itch.
It's like riding a bike, man. It's like riding a bike. And we'll be back in case you're joining us for the first time, and maybe we have some new people. We are Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. GMT. If you're in Europe, we do have a few European listeners. So we welcome you Monday to Friday to talk about the game of the world of football from a soccer perspective. And on that note, Kevin, I'll let you, as always, say goodbye.
Tomorrow, for patrons only, make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork and take the $2 pledge monthly to get your Canadian soccer coverage from Dwayne and I, Canadian Premier League, Canadian Women's National Team, Canadian Men's National Team, and more on tomorrow's Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. But thanks for bearing with us during our break. Thank you for coming back to listening to us in big numbers, and we'll talk to each other very soon. But until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcasts.